Welcome to the Premium Way podcast, a space where premium is not reduced to aesthetics or price tags, but understood as identity, as a way of life. In here, we operate at the intersection of psychology, perception, strategy, leadership, and the invisible signals that decide who gets chosen, trusted, and remembered. Our philosophy? Ditch the stereotypes. Ditch the idea that premium has only one face. Premium was never meant to be sterile. It was meant to be rich in character, reflective of your true core and your dream buyer's deepest desires. Like the finest wine, layered, complex, unique, unmistakable to those who know what they are tasting. Refined without losing its edge, unafraid to be different, and impossible to confuse with anything else. This is the room where the ordinary stops applying. This is where standards are set, not followed, and where premium stops being something that you chase and becomes something you embody. This is your permission slip to succeed your way. I'm your host, Yasmin, and this is The Premium Way. The vibe of today's episode is, how spicy do you want to get? The answer is yes. Welcome back to another incredible, value-packed episode of The Premium Way podcast. There is a certain something that we gotta demystify, debunk, clean up. Just like I mentioned in the pre-intro punch, people, marketers, consultants, strategists are selling you left and right. It just takes some weeks or months in order for people to warm up with your brand and trust it and eventually buy it. It takes so and so many touch points for them to either start paying attention to you, considering you, or even buying from you. And let's sprinkle in a nugget of astrology. I have a Capricorn moon. I'm analytical, pragmatic, and efficient as fuck. If it's not efficient, count me out. Because what are we wasting our time for? And so observing this for a decade now, that apparently it needs to take so much time for people to trust and buy from you, I thought to myself, since I love to challenge the status quo, there must be a different way. There must be a different way because I'm not accepting this. And in addition to that, I've had so many conversations with clients, with peers, all revolving around the same challenge. They said, all collectively, if only people got to know me, they would love me. Because when people get to know me, they do love me. And they stay and they buy over and over again, or they come back over and over again. But getting them through the door, that is my hurdle. That is my challenge. And I thought to myself, interesting. Because then that very clearly is not necessarily a matter of it has to take a long time in order for people to trust you. It is a matter of translating how lovable you are, how great you are, into the first impression, into the first and very early perception of your brand. So many people out there, and maybe that includes you as well, have what I call a slow burn brand. And in dating, we're being sold, this is healthy. And it might be, probably is. But in branding, again, why would you go for a slow burn brand if you can also have a love at first sight brand? This is the concept, the name, the method, the framework that I coined. And I want to just give a disclaimer of whenever you see love at first sight brand roaming around the internet, people marketing that, talking about it, be assured Yasmin said it first. Yasmin brought it first. And I just can't with people who love to get inspired to the point where their egos are too big to even give credit. That was never me and will never be me. If I get inspired by someone, if I saw something that someone else said or posted and I found it incredible, I'm the first person to shout their name from the rooftops. Because I don't live in scarcity.
or weird competitive vibes of, oh my God, I can't name my sources because people will go there. Anyways, I told you it's going to be a little bit spicy today. So all of what I said is the reason I came up with the Love at First Sight brand concept, framework, method. Because I frankly said had enough of my amazing genius clients feeling like it takes forever to get people through their door, especially if people stay once they really got to know them, then that is no issue with their personality, with their delivery, with their service. The opposite is true, actually. So let's just see how we can get clients through the door way more quickly, way more smoothly, way more seamlessly, and skip the line, basically, of the no, like, and trust factor. See, I don't even have the chronological order of it because I don't live by it. I don't think to myself, what can we do today to enhance the no, like, and trust factor of my brand? No, I sit here and I'm like, okay, how can I make more people fall in love at first sight with my brand? And it's a different angle and it lets you opt for different actions. And that then creates different results. So one piece, one mistake I see people with a slow burn brand making with a brand where people need to get to know them first in order to then eventually fall in love with them is that they try to portray every single facet of theirs in their brand. The casual self, the glam self, the boss self, the funny self, the humanitarian self, the whatever self. And it changes on a daily or weekly basis or on a seasonal basis. And every 2 or 3 months, there's a major rebrand. And like, I'm a different era and I'm reborn and I'm a different person and da 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 da. And it's all these theatrics, respectfully, to the point where they can't even be known for something super hyper specific. Their work in the back end may stay the same, but the packaging keeps changing. And this suggests volatility, and volatility energetically doesn't create buyer safety. Just think about your favorite restaurants, and you very, very surely have your 2-3 favorite dishes on the menu. Imagine if that changed every 2 or 3 months and you couldn't get your favorite dish back. That would be sad, wouldn't it? You'd be like, no, I just fell in love with this dish and now it's being taken away from me again. That's a heartbreak. And we don't want people to feel heartbreaks with our brands. And as humans, we are people of habit, creatures of habit. So even if your back end stays the same, if there are too many changes, too much volatility on the front end, that very, very subtly and quietly, no, ChatGPT didn't write this, quietly breaks trust. If there's too much volatility on the front end, it quietly breaks trust, even with existing clients, even with clients that are in your world for a bit longer. And again, it makes it even harder for new people to find their way into your world because they're like, there's a lot of like change going on. I just want to arrive. I just want to settle. Same way you just want to settle with your person. Your clients are not in their hookup buying phase. They want to find their forever homes. And that needs to come with steadiness. And no, it's not authentic to just spin all of your facets around every single week on social media or in your online brand or wherever you're positioning and placing your brand. Okay? So being that all-you-can-eat buffet for everyone, thinking it will appeal to more people or increase chances to appeal to more people is not the way to go. It's actually causing harm to your brand. And I want you to think of it like a perfume metaphor or in perfume terms. Fun fact, I'm obsessed with perfumes, and mark my words, there will be a perfume brand under my name or whatever name I give it, but I will be the creator of it. And I'm buzzing with excitement for it already. Anyways, if you're an investor, please message me privately and let's talk about getting that line on the ground. Back to the topic. What happens when you mix a super potent eau de parfum with even more drops of different fragrances? The potency gets diluted because each of the carefully chosen main fragrances and notes has less room to shine. So from today on, You want to think about your brand like a highly potent eau de parfum, the one that costs much more than the less intense and concentrated version of it, the eau de toilette. So when a perfumer is about to create a new perfume, he has a clear vision of what this perfume is about, what it stands for, who it's for, what occasion it's for even, what identity it enhances, what archetype it locks in, what it embodies, which character traits it amplifies. And the notes are carefully chosen. It's not random. Think about why you have chosen a perfume in the past. Because you smelled it and you had a vision for, oh, this is for this occasion, or I need it for this outfit, or for this mood, or to lock in this identity, or enhance these traits inside of me. When I walk into the boardroom and it's about negotiating million-dollar deals, I want to feel like my most confident self, right? So perfumes have a very clear and specific assignment, and not every perfume is for everyone and just every occasion. And your brand isn't either. A perfume is a tool that we choose to enhance or amplify a specific thing. And your brand is a tool as well that your dream clients choose because of what they desire to enhance and amplify for and within themselves. Another example, the hammer isn't supposed to also cut wood or paint a wall. The hammer has one sole purpose. Just like your brand has its main purpose, your brand is a tool. So let the FOMO of, oh my God, I need to show everything all the time, let that go. Because no, you're just diluting the experience and you're prolonging the trust building process. And that is the opposite effect of what a love at first sight brand should do. So this is the psychology behind high carat dream clients deciding for or against your brand. And you really want to apply this when intentionally and strategically shaping your brand from now on. So with all of that tool talk, what is the actual goal of branding? Very simple. Your brand should speak to your audience's core desires and depict or anchor the identity they want to embody more deeply. And it does that in three ways. So you speak to your target audience's core desires through embodying the security of the fulfillment of these desires visually, verbally, and vibe-wise. Your visuals communicate the feeling, they set the scene, they depict the mood, and the brain takes in pictures way more easily. One picture, one image says more than 1,000 words, and I'm heavy on the show more than you speak in your marketing. Visuals can do a lot of the heavy lifting for you. And that's why I'm so big on building really intentional visual landscapes and scenes and worlds inside of my brand and for my brand and with my brand. Your messaging just anchors all of that. Your messaging, your verbals, your words communicate the promise. They make it tangible for the rational part of our brains. And then your overall vibe, your undercurrent, communicates the certainty of fulfillment of these desires and your trustworthiness energetically. So let's go deeper into the undercurrent parts, the vibe parts. This is what your brand radiates, how you do it, what energy you infuse your output with, the lens from which you're teaching. It then infuses how you speak to your audience, what words you choose, and how you design programs and brandings in and out. So sit with what yours is for a second. What you get this feedback of, that's just her or his vibe for. For me, it's always my mix of sassiness, but also the deep substance and expertise that I bring. And very often, I'm super underestimated. The way that I speak, sometimes the way that I dress, the way that I move, the way that I have a baby face at 28 years old, still somehow, I always get guessed younger or again, underestimated. So then I also chose visuals for my brand that are a bit more mature, a bit more serious. So I can balance and even out this youthfulness that I have to myself because I wanted to be taken more seriously by a certain target audience. And if I look like a little teenager jumping around the grass, then that would probably be a bit more hard. So you can see how I intentionally use my brand visuals like a tool, my brand like a tool in order to achieve what I want, a certain caliber of clients. So this is what you can do and use for yourself as well. It's like, what are traits about your natural essence? Like, you don't have to shame yourself or criticize yourself for it. But just with myself, I have a lot of youthfulness to myself. Again, the way that I speak is not very corporate-y. It's not very conventional. It's not very traditional. I don't, frankly, give a fuck about being, quote-unquote, corporate appropriate. Obviously, if I had a corporate contract, that would be a little bit different. And I can be that. But my natural expression within my personal brand online isn't that. I'm the yes girl type of like modern, again, sassy, a little bit badassy. My body language is like that. I grew up with black music, rap music. It's in my bones. It's in my veins to not be stiff and sterile and robotic. But I also had to be mindful that at first sight, some people, also people within my target audience, might not take that too seriously or expect too much expertise based on how I appear naturally. So I had to think about, okay, how can we even that out? How can I use visual elements, the way that I do my messaging and my brand, to, again, even that out, to create a little bit of balance where my actual core personality is still shining through and carrying that, aka my vibe, my undercurrent, my sassy Yasmin self. But it's not coming through in a dysfunctional way, but now in a functional way, because it just adds that little spice to the overall little bit more serious, a little bit more luring brand. So to summarize this, your undercurrent is the energetic lens through which everything you create is filtered. It answers the questions of how do you speak, what energy do you bring into your work, what tone do you naturally communicate with? And then it shapes your messaging, your design, your offers, your teachings. And it's the reason why sometimes people look at a brand, your brand, and say, I don't know what it is, but I just love your vibe. And mind you, that was the sole and entire reason someone who has just found me on social media paid me $55,000 the next day for a 6-month contract. Because of my vibe. That person explicitly said it was your vibe. I checked out competitors of yours. I checked out the others, maybe even those with more experience or those that make more money than you. But it was your vibe that had me decide for you. Take that. That is the undercurrent. It's subtle, but it influences everything. And so how do we actually make that a little bit more tangible? What I do love to work with are the Jungian archetypes from Carl Gustav Jung. And he came up with 12 archetypes. What I will say is that we all carry all 12 of these archetypes within ourselves. It's really just about which is predominant, which are we using at what setting, and so on and so forth. Now, within the love at first sight positioning formula, we then combine 3 elements. Your primary brand archetype, which represents you, what you do, how you do it. It's you, basically, your primary brand archetype. And then we have your secondary archetype, what I call the bridge archetype, which is the bridge between your primary brand archetype and your target audience's desire. So that bridge archetype is the nuance you fill your primary out with. And it often is aligned with your target audience's traits, which then creates belonging and safety. Let me give you an example. When I chose the ruler archetype for my brand, which is about leadership, seriousness, legacy, empire vibe, the ruler, you get the point just by hearing that name, right? It is the king, queen, emperor, empress type of archetype. It's very royal. But then again, every archetype also comes with a shadow side. Just like I said, my youthfulness also has a downside, a potential downside. So I use my very intentionally use my visuals, my verbals to even that out, to balance that out. in order to frame it just the right way. Same with the archetypes. There is a downside to each archetype. There is a shadow side to each archetype. So when I choose the ruler, it's really about power, legacy, structure, leadership, ruling, dominating. What is the potential shadow side of it? The potential shadow side is that this can intimidate my target audience, or my target audience back then, right? So nowadays I'm open to also work with men, for example. But back then, I was solely focused on women, especially those that are more on the energetic side of things, that don't really come from a marketing background, and that really need my support and my work in order to bridge their exceptional genius into a more tangible way of their dream clients receiving it. How do we translate my work into a positioning, into a million-dollar positioning? That was basically the vibe, okay? Now, people not necessarily coming from a field of marketing or bro marketing or whatever and being more in a social field, the ruler or the traits of the ruler archetype can intimidate them quietly to the point where they might admire from afar, but they don't dare to step closer. And then we don't want to point fingers and be like, well, if you don't dare to step your game up, then you're just not the right client for me. No. It's also about radical ownership, that I know if I choose the ruler archetype, the shadow side of it can be intimidation, overpowering, not being super approachable. So how do I balance that out? I then use my bridge archetype to not water down the ruler archetype, but to yet again balance and even it out and make it a little bit more approachable. And then I chose the lover. Or the lover chose me, because I live and breathe being the lover anyways. It wasn't just a logical choice from my head, but it is a representation of what my core and my undercurrent is. The lover archetype is about intimacy, sensuality, femininity, playfulness, flirtation. That is me. When you know me, you know that is me. But I even have this like Libra rising, astrology again, okay? I have a Libra rising. I am ruled by Venus. I am love on two legs. I am sensuality on two legs. I am artwork on two legs. I love everything that's glittery and feminine and rosy and then pastel colors and beautiful and sparkly. And I'm Aphrodite. I am just Aphrodite. But then again, with my Capricorn moon, these traits are very ruler, very masculine, focused, driven, committed, structural, analytical, pragmatic. And so choosing the primary brand archetype of the ruler creates the respect that I do desire. The bridge archetype, being the lover, creates the approachability that the ruler in and of itself often doesn't have. Because while my target audience aspires to be a bit more like the ruler in terms of their leadership, their sovereignty, their power, their nervous systems currently aren't acclimated to that. They are acclimated to a little bit more softness. So how do I get them in? How do I get them over the threshold through the door into my world by depicting a little bit more of that feminine softness on the outside as well? And having them receive that when they come into touch with me. Makes sense? Makes sense, right? So this is how you very intentionally choose your primary and bridge archetype based on what you and your brand represent, but also what your target audience's desires are. And how these can be best represented. And that then makes your brand very clear, magnetic, recognizable, and has people instantly thinking and feeling, that's for me, I love it. And that makes your brand love at first sight. So think about when or how you hired a coach, a mentor, a service provider, what brands you've bought from. What did they embody? What did they stand for that you yearned for? What did you see in that? What did they radiate that felt like a guarantee that you will have your needs met and your desires fulfilled? So towards the end, let's also move into one major positioning mistake that you want to be conscious about, that I see way too many people making. Just to be clear again, the front end branding and positioning are about the intersection of what you want to be known for and what your dream clients look for and desire. AKA represented through your primary and bridge archetype. Now, many are going too hard branding themselves on what the target audience truly needs and receives with you because you've got the skills. Now, listening to this, you might be like, okay, Yasmin, what's the difference? There's a difference between what they think they need versus what they truly need. What they truly need, you know, because you're the expert. You can diagnose them. They can very often not diagnose themselves, at least not very accurately. So they think they need or want X. You in reality know it's about Y for them. But a lot of people put Y at the forefront, in the front end and brand, and position themselves around Y. But your dream clients in their minds are like, this is not what I need. I need X. So they keep looking and scanning for X. And even though they would be best served in your world, as long as you don't brand and position yourself based on X in the front end and then give them what they need, the Y in the back end, that's going to be difficult. So it's really about the principle of tell them what they want to hear and give them what they truly need after the paywall in the back end. Because you need that spark. The front end of your brand should focus on what your audience desires, what they yearn for, what they want to become, who they want to become, what they think that it is that they want or need. The transformation they secretly or not so secretly crave. And then again, the deeper work, what they actually need, happens on the back end. But this desire in the front end is what creates the first spark. And without the spark, there is no relationship that could ever form. So let us sum this up. If you want to build a love at first sight brand, which you do want because you're still here, there are three things to focus on. First, identify the undercurrents of your brand. Second, determine your primary and bridge archetype. And third, make sure your positioning speaks to your audience's desires, not just their problems that you have diagnosed. Because the strongest brands don't need people to get to know them first. They create recognition instantly. And that is the difference between a brand that feels like effort versus one that feels like effortless attraction 24/7. And that is your love at first sight brand. So this episode was a taste of, an addition to my The Love at First Sight Brands Masterclass mini program. This is a 3-part masterclass series consisting of class number 1, Love at First Sight Positioning Formula. So if you love this episode, you will have it with slides, with detailed explanations, so you can really nail your Love at First Sight brand positioning, as well as the archetype mix that we talked about. Class number 2 is the Love at First Sight Client Attraction Method. And class number 3 is the Love at First Sight Content Formula. So you also know, how do I translate that now into content that creates desire and demand at first sight? And my clients no longer, or my audience no longer, needs weeks or even months in order to warm up with my brand and finally trust me and then finally buy from me. And in this mini program, we dive into the psychology of high-end buyers, the positioning behind the Love at First Sight brands for making other options irrelevant to your dream buyers as well, and how to attract and convert dream clients 10 times faster than you're currently doing. And definitely check out the show notes, because you will find the link to that program in the show notes, and you will find a juicy podcast listener exclusive discount code that you can apply and bring the price down to a fraction of the regular ticket. I'm excited to welcome you into the Love at First Sight Brand Masterclass, and you'll hear me in the next episode.